Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Wright's Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm sorry, I'm having a super busy day. I'm just sliding this in. Thank you for joining Stephen the Warman Wright's Kickfighting Podcast Show. I am excited to once again bring you kickboxing action. We've got some things that went on this past weekend. Of course, we've got the Glory Card coming up tomorrow night. This won't be a long show. I've been super busy. A lot of you guys know I train high-level mixed martial artists, guys you find at UFC level, and I also have boxers and kickboxers, and they just hit a really, really busy period of time. I've got Justin Wren, who's getting ready to go in a couple weeks. I got Jared Rochal going this weekend. And then, of course, it was announced that my fighter, Johnny Hendricks, is scheduled to go on October 3rd. So I've been super busy, so I apologize for being out. Let's go ahead and do the normal. First of all, you are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload something to Twitter once a week or once every 2 weeks. Twitter name is twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, all one word. Also, the most efficient way to get the podcast is through iTunes. Going to go ahead and enter Warman Kickfighting Show or enter LORDGAUL into the iTunes search engine and the show pops right up. Lord Gaul was my username when I first fell in love with kickboxing. So when I was on Kakatugi, K1 Fans, K1 USA, back when those forums were big, that was my name. So that's why I always go with that tag. So let's go ahead and go into it. I don't have a lot of show. Like I said, I've got I'm super busy with all the fights I've got scheduled and so on. But I definitely wanted to take the time to break down what had happened. Two major cards I'm going to talk about. Clearly, I'm going to talk about the Glory card. And then I'm going to talk about Jerome LeBanner and his last fight as he was able to get a victory on the Fight Night St. Tropez cards that have been going on. They usually do a couple a year, and they use like older guys. They've used Peter Arts in the past and so on, but they've been using Jerome quite regularly, and he was able to get one more fight before he walked away from a spectacular, what would be a Hall of Fame career if we had a kickboxing Hall of Fame. That's going to have to be one of my goals as I continue to, you know, been doing the podcast for now, what, five, six years. So definitely good to see kickboxing websites. Good to see people, you know, interest Glory and the interest that they've brought to the kickboxing world. K1 still doing their thing. One day I want to find somebody who's got like a really big stable gym somewhere in the world and try to get a Hall of Fame going there in the kickboxing or Muay Thai international community. But it's always good that, you know, somebody who's had such a career gets to, you know, walk away from the game on top, even though I've got some questions, if you will, about what happened in that fight. But I'm going to go ahead and break down the Fight Night St. Tropez card, talk about some of the winners and losers, and then, of course, I'll hit up the big Glory card. Going to go ahead and start with the first notable name, Frank Munoz, as he gets a decision victory over Zinedine Hamar Lane. And Lane, someone I've talked about before. He's fought, you know, Alexei Ignashov. He's fought on, you know, Tatnav. He's a regular, and I've seen him fight several times. Frank Munoz is still relatively young. I think Frank Munoz is in his mid-20s. He is a guy who, I mean, he's willing to fight anybody, and I think it took him a little while to find his groove, and then all of a sudden he wins a Super Combat tournament not too long ago, or a couple years ago, and that was kind of the thing that kind of gave him that confidence. Like, a lot of people thought that he was going to be the next big star, moved from Spain to Holland, trained at a lot of different gyms in Holland, trying to find his groove, and then he was able to get that big tournament win, and that's a seasonal tournament win, so that kind of went through the whole year. I want to say 2,000 years ago, I want to say it's 2014 that he was able to make that, or 2013 that he was able to make that run. So, shout out to Frank Munoz by staying busy, getting another big win. For him, it's all about recognition. He is one of several guys who I'm going to say the Glory really needs to consider to add to their light heavyweight division, because, you know, with Saki, of course, trying to, you know, still working out his, I'll say his both contract situation and just his, you know, what he wants to do career-wise, whether he wants to commit to people who can pay him, you know, big money and fight in the Middle East, or people who can give him that kind of international recognition. Because, you know, his last fight was pretty much a forgettable performance by Saki, but he's not a forgettable athlete. He's got the KO power. He's a special fighter, and he needs guys like Frank Munoz's of the world to step up and compete against, because it just kind of – it's good for them because they get the feel of going against, you know, one of the best in the world. And it's good for him because he gets to show that he's still one of the guys in this sport. Frank Munoz needs to be one of the guys on the Glory roster. He's good enough. I don't think he is good enough to be the champion that I've seen so far. He hasn't shown me the KO pop or the consistency with his offense when he goes against elite level guys. But does he deserve, in the way that somebody deserves to be fighting in the UFC, they deserve the opportunity to be going against the best. Frank Munoz, whether he can be the best fighter in the world or not, is not relevant. What's relevant is he represents one of the top fighters, 20, 30 fighters in the world at the weight class. And if there's a, you know, organization that's given that weight class opportunities, Frank Munoz has got to be one of those names. He's got to be in the Glory, fighting those guys, testing who he is and what he can be. And I hope that he gets that opportunity sometime soon. Jodwicha, the super kid, who a couple years ago just went on an awesome streak, was just eating up the stadiums. He gets a victory over Jimmy Vionnette of France. And it just means, Jodwicha, I want him to get international opportunities. He's a guy who we always talked about. He beats you at your style. If you want a body kick, he'll body kick. If you want a clinch, he'll clinch. You know, him and Petr Bunchu had some, you know, some crazy clinch wars. Some of those fights entertaining. Some of those fights kind of, you know, rinse and repeat. Nevertheless, Jodwicha represents elite stadium fighters fighting international. And I've said it on the show many times before. That's what I want to see. I want people to see how high the level of fighting is. I think people can kind of look the other way when they say, oh, Jodwicha is going against, you know, Sanchai or Petr Bunchu or Singdam, it's happening in Thailand again. It's almost kind of like brushed under the rug because they fight three or four times in a year, or sometimes 1 month and then again the next month. Sometimes people don't realize how high the level of skill is, how good those guys are. But when they fight international, the message is sent. Our best athletes aren't as good as these guys when you get to those lower weight classes. So, Jodwicha fighting international, big time stuff. Glad he got the opportunity. Glad he got the W. And I believe he was, you know, one of only, what, two or three Muay Thai fights in the card. I think most of the card was full of 4x2-minute rounds, which is a weird combination or weird set of rules to go by. I don't like the fact that, you know, things can be draws and whatnot, but 4x2 is what they'd gone with. His fight, fortunately, got to be 5x3. Good stuff by Jodwicha. Alexander, I hope I'm not pronouncing this gentleman's name wrong. Vizevodov, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, gets a victory over Philip Verlinden. And, of course, anytime a name like Philip Verlinden, who, of course, gets a lot of Glory opportunities, he's got a relationship with not just the company, but with the Glory Gym, which is now Hemrick Gym. He's been around for a while. He's an experienced kickboxer. A win off of him means something. Alexander getting this win, I believe it's Vizevodov. I believe that's how it's pronounced. And Alexander, it's just, when you get this kind of win, I always want to know what's the follow-up. So clearly he needs to go ahead and fight somebody. I wouldn't even mind if he fought Frank Munoz. Just go ahead and get them on some Glory undercard. We want to keep these guys active. And whether he's going against, you know, Mike LeMaire or whoever, whether he fights at middleweight or light heavyweight, I want to see him in Glory once you get a win like Philip Verlinden under your belt. Next fight I'm going to talk about. Same thing. Sergey Popin from Russia gets a victory over Daniel Younga. I had this fight a draw. I thought Popin won the first two rounds. I thought Daniel Younga won the second two. Popin did score a sweep on Daniel Younga where he came underneath, and he did score one big shot, but I thought the steady work was the low kicks. The low kicks clearly had Popin hurt in the third round. Not like hurt to the point where he was like, you know, limping and so on, but you could see that they were doing their damage in the way, not in a way of like, you know, watching like some of the boxers that used to go against the K1 Max guys. Well, Masato would, you know, on, you know, the Dynamite show New Year's Eve, they throw some poor boxer in there, he just chopped their legs off and they'd be hopping on one leg. Not like that, you know, like when, you know, Masato Phillips. So I'm not saying that his leg was damaged like that. I'm saying you can see the significant effect of the low kick on him. You can see the movement of Popin kind of slow a little bit. And you could see that Daniel Younga was starting to have some offensive success in rounds 3 and 4. The most consistent offense was coming from him. But that early start by Sergey, who loves his spinning kicks and played in space, good athlete. I want to see him fight more. I thought that it was a draw. I've got no problem with Sergey Popovin winning. It was a close fight. I want to see him. And this fight, you know, perfect example, should have taken place on a glory card. Should have taken place on tomorrow's card. I want to see these kind of athletes get their due. So shout out Russia again, continuing to produce high-level kickboxers and Muay Thai fighters. Sergey Popovin seems to be another in that line. Fight 8 on this card, Johan Ladan gets a third-round stoppage over Jonathan Oliveira. And Oliveira, of course, he fought for glory. And his outings against elite guys, he has not fared well this year in particular. So we've got him, you know, getting stopped by Raymond Daniels. And then we've got him getting stopped by Artur Kashenko. And now we've got him getting stopped by Johan Ladan. This was a full rules Muay Thai fight. They put the elbow pads on these gentlemen. And it shows that the pads, they might keep you from getting cut, which is the purpose of them. But they still hurt. Still hurts if you score the right kind of shot. Johan Ladan went 1-2, pulled back through his... threw his power elbow with his right. Jonathan threw a left hook to counter. The hook was pretty much slipped or it fell or it missed short. And right away, Johan Ladan fired another short elbow. And bang, Oliveira went down. Oliveira got up. Punches were the caused two more downs. And Johan Ladan gets another win in France. If you were to go off his resume of fighting international guys in France, Johan Ladan's done pretty well. You know, I mean, even back to the point where he beat Gregorian, who I believe was 19 or 20 at the time, on the It's Showtime that they had, Tyrone Spong was on that card, Badahari's return was on that card. I remember being there, and I remember thinking, man, Johan Ladan gets these wins here and there. It's just the consistency. Consistently, and then, you know, he's fighting two styles, you know, Muay Thai and kickboxing, so clearly he's at a disadvantage there. But man, I look at him as a fighter, and I say, he's had a really good career. Fought international, fought all over the world, been to, you know, Thailand, been to Australia. He has really a great career. When he moves on, he opens up his own gym, whatever. Johan Ladan has got nothing to be ashamed of. Clearly, I don't think he's the glory level as far as kickboxing goes. He can get the opportunity. But he's a full rules Muay Thai fighter, and it's too bad they didn't have, Thai fight didn't turn into, or Max Muay Thai for that matter, didn't turn into a K1 level brand for guys who do full rules Muay Thai international. He continues to fight for promoters and on promotions like this in France. He continues to get his shot. He continues to get to the fights on the Yakao. Johan Ladan is going to continue to fight and get wins and get good losses against elite level guys, but he will always kind of stay in that same place. Good career, but no one will ever say Johan Ladan had a great career in terms of, you know, Muay Thai and international recognition. Next fight we're going to talk about, last fight on this card, is Jerome LeBanner as he gets a win over Carl Robertson. And Jerome LeBanner outscored Carl Robertson. Robertson, of course, did really well. But the story of this fight, clearly, if we just look at the fight, the story of this fight is Carl Robertson won this fight by KO. He put together a series of offense at the end of the second round, and Jerome LeBanner was given what could only be described as a 3-minute break to get himself back up. He got every possible second of 10 seconds to get to his feet. He got another extended, you know, are you okay? Go ahead and add another 5-10 seconds on for that. Goes over to the opponent, are you still alive? He's clearly cool. Goes over to the scorecards. It dragged it out to make sure Jerome LeBanner got out of the round. It was so obvious and deliberate. It just looked horrible. Like, there's literally videos all over Facebook of just Jerome LeBanner's 20-minute break between rounds. It's unfortunate that it happened because Carl Robertson did, you know, have a really good spot there, and we need some good U.S. Kickboxers. I know as a fact that Jerome LeBanner, the team, they were looking for a guy, and they were looking for a guy, it sounded like, short notice, because I know as a fact that Demario Dennis was asked about this fight, and I knew that they were looking for an American, and Carl Robertson, I'm not sure if he was their original guy in mind, and then he got healthy, or then he, you know, thought that he was going to lose the fight because of injury, and then got healthy and was able to take it, or if he was just a last-minute call, I know Dennis was a last-minute call, but Carl Robertson went out there, competed to the best of his ability, dropped Jerome LeBanner, and he was outpointed for the other, I think it was 5-2s, which goes ahead and shows you what, you know, 5-2s. But Jerome LeBanner's done that before. There was a fight with, Stefan Leko that had, you know, 5-2s. So at the end of his career, he's got nothing to prove. He just went out there and really he got the win. And it was cool to see how the fans responded to him. And, I mean, I guess the only thing left is to look back on Jerome LeBanner's career. And I'll go ahead and start breaking on some of the particulars. First and foremost, we're talking about a guy who, as I heard it, if I'm hearing it correctly, he heard about K1 in an ad in the paper. And I remember one of his older managers used to always post in the kickboxing forums and said, this guy's just a great athlete. Just a lot of things came to him. He's a hulking physical specimen. He was in wars. There's no great elite fighter that Jerome LeBanner didn't compete with in his day at some period of time. None. You know, like, go back to it. You've got Peter Arts, Andy Hoog, Musashi, like you know, all the, I mean, Simi Shilton, another era, you know, Rembo Wondowski, the one and one there. It's just, I mean, the Mark Hunt battles, which are still, you know, YouTube, you know, go-tos for a lot of people, Stefan Leko. It's just, he was in an era where you fought them all. Francisco Filho, you fought them all. And clearly he's got his losses. Ray Seffel KO, KO'd him. Peter Arts KO'd him. A lot of guys out there. Sam Dreco, they fought close. I look back on it, you know, lost Andy Hoog too in a decision. I look back on his career and I go, but you fought and you pretty much beat everybody that beat you. At some period of time, you got the opportunity and you got your hand raised against everybody in your era. And your era stretched from, I mean, we're 20 years, we're 20 years later. From his K1, we are in 2015 right now. His K1 debut, if I'm remembering this correctly, pardon me, even wants to go look this up. But his K1 debut, if I'm remembering correctly, was, what was it? Oh, man, I'm trying to look it up and remember it. 1995. Okay, I got it. Against Nokvid Devi in March 3rd of 1995. So he has been in this game fighting elite, because his next fight after that was Masaki Satake and then Mike Renardo. He's been fighting elite guys for 20 years. So at the end of his career, I mean, he's got wins and losses against pretty much everybody. Fought international. He was a star. I mean, people knew him. Like Japan, they loved him. He had a certain look, the way he beat chess. He had his downfall. There was a period of time where everybody was kind of like, what's going on with Jerome LeBanner? He seemed like he's complaining a lot. There's a thing with Remy Bunjowski where him and his people didn't like the decision. And they, you know, were upset with it. They argued it, and they got it overturned. Remy would then later, they'd fight again, and Remy would win that rematch. But that moment, there was a couple moments where he didn't like the decision. And a few fights, there was an event before he fought Hungman Choi where they said he had some contract dispute, and he pretty much just hung out there and wasn't going to fight. And then they fixed the dispute, and he came out, and he main evented that event, and he beat Hungman Choi. And you could see that he didn't want to, but he went out there and he beat him. He's really upset that that his contract situation wasn't worked out. It was fixed, and then he competed. The Kyotaro event, of course, where three rounds he thought that he'd won, and it was close, and Kyotaro had an awesome third round. It's a close fight, but he thought that he won the first two rounds easy. He was really upset, walked out really upset, and Kyotaro moved on. He lost by forfeit. There was a period of time where those sort of things were happening, and he was upset with the decision, and people were like, what's going on with this guy? He's always upset. He's always mad. Something's always, you know, not going the right way for this guy. Whatever happened to the guy who just used to come in and just let his hands go, fight anybody, big, strong, muscular guy, a lot of power. What happened to that dude? And that small period of time in his history, it came and went. I still feel most people are going to know him as the battle cyborg, the guy who just came and just literally would run through tournaments. The unfortunate part of his career, I'd say more so than even that little period of time where it seemed like he was arguing all the time, the unfortunate part of his career is what was supposed to be his year. The year where, you know, Ernesto Hoots gets what would be, you know, what is his 4th K1 World Grand Prix Championship. I go back to that year, and I think he went, you know, what was he, 7-0 that year? Let me see. 7-0, all stoppages. So then he had a decision with Mark Hunt. But literally, he went, the year started off in March again. There goes that number. March 3rd. It started there, and then it goes Amada, Hunt, Sinitsa, Don Fry, that's Don Fry. Gary Goodrich, that's good. Gary Goodrich. Musashi, Mark Hunt. In that year, he just won by KO against all these guys up until Mark Hunt. And then he meets Ernesto Hoost. And the year that was supposed to be his K1 World Grand Prix year. And, of course, the broken arm kept that from happening. But, I mean, he went on to put on a show. People know him as a great, awesome fighter. They know him for his highlight videos. He's one of the first, and it was a Sheer Dog highlight of all that. He's one of the first kickboxers that I really got to see. So I hope that you go off into your career great. I know you're going to, you know, look back on the Cyril Beattie thing, and that'll be fun for you. Your time in Japan, the response of the fans, your time training in Holland. What a great career by Jerome LeBanner, and I wish him all the best in whatever he does. We're going to go ahead and slide over to the glory card. Again, not everything in the glory card is worthy of, you know, talking about to a great extent. I'm going to skip some of the fights, but I do really want to focus on some of the main ones that have kind of international appeal to it. First, we're going to talk about Giga Chikadze, a guy who's fought for Glory before, who's fought for It's Showtime before, got a big history, was at Mike's Gym for a really long time, and then he, I believe he's at King's MMA now, and then he's going to go against Anvar Boynizarov, and I think that this is the kind of fight that Giga, who's moving down featherweight, so he's moving down to 143. He's never been a big guy when he fought at 70 kgs. He's going to move down there. I think he's going to beat Anzar. I think Anzar, it's not that Anzar's not game. I just think that Giga's another level. He's a very talented fighter, coming off of a glory win already earlier this year. I'm excited to see more of him. Good fighter, good competitor. I think he wins a kickboxing match here, 3-round decision. The most interesting fight in this undercard to me, Mirtho Grunhart versus Chad Sugden. I want to see how Sugden's movement and style matches up with a guy like Mirtho, who's going to come forward. He's going to land aggressive explosion, body kicks, combinations, but more kind of power combinations. He's not a combination kick guy consistently. He more kind of has these moments of explosions and movement, explosions and movement. Sugden, of course, is, he's pretty much a boxer in kickboxing. I mean, his head movement, his hands down, hands up, shoulders, angles, he's having fun out there. He's got a unique style. This is going to be a fun fight. I don't think it's an upset if Chad Sugden wins, because, you know, Grunhart, of course, he's got the name. He won the K1 Max after it wasn't really the K1 Max anymore, but it still had a great field. There was Zambides was in that field, Reese McAllister was in that field, Artur Kashinko was in that field. Grunhart really had a good run, really, really good fighter. I'm excited to see this fight and how it plays off. Slight lean towards Grunhart, but I think it'll be a good one. Next one I'm going to talk about is Anderson Broderick Silva as he goes against Jamal Ben Sadiq. Ben Sadiq keeps getting opportunities. Of course, he had the suspension last year after the fight where he hit Hezzy Higgins after the round was over. I mean, just, you can't even explain it. He literally gooned him. He threw him on the ground, and he threw several shots when he was in the ground like he'd gone crazy for a moment, and that kind of got him suspended. He came back, got a short notice KO fight on the France card earlier this year. Anderson Broderick Silva, good kickboxer, just kind of had some things go against him. He should have been or would have been in contention. Him and Adebuyi were supposed to fight, and the winner of them was supposed to go fight Rico Verheerven for the title. But when that didn't happen, when that fight fell through, they just went ahead and put Benjamin Adebuyi in the fight, and Silva was left out. Silva, he gets a win over Ben Sadiq. I got to imagine he's going to get the title shot. You know, I don't think that overall his record in glory is spectacular, but it's solid. So I definitely want to see what happens when he gets in the opera. You know, if he, I have him beating Ben Sadiq. Ben Sadiq hasn't shown me consistent enough kickboxing for me to go for him. He, you know, drops his hands and throws power here and there, but he hasn't been consistent with his kickboxing since, I'd say, the Remy Bojowski fight. That was the fight where I was like, oh man, he's able to catch Remy's kicks and fire his own, and because he's big and strong and Remy was at the end of his career, I really thought that Ben Sadiq could have something, even put it together, but consistency never came. Lost to an old Peter Arts in what was pretty much a gunfight where both guys are just throwing heat. I need to see more from him. He, from what I've seen, he doesn't have what it takes to beat Anderson Broderick Silva. Very skilled. I think he wins this fight for sure. Going to go ahead and move on to the main card. The tournament, in my personal opinion, and I hope I don't offend these guys, other coaches or whatever, it's Justin Jacoby's tournament to lose. He's got the most. I mean, none of the guys are super experienced. I'd at least say Quentin O'Brien is more, got a Muay Thai background, kickboxing background, as opposed to both that and MMA. Like, you put his name in YouTube and it shows a bunch of his amateur fights come up right away. Case Green is, of course, coming off the loss to Mike Lemaire. I believe that was in France. And then, of course, we've got Ariel Sepulveda, who has fought in New York, fought Muay Thai, fights MMA. These guys are guys who I'm hoping they show something in their showcase opportunity to really steal the crowd, to really, really perform well, really put on a show. As of right now, I'm not seeing any of those guys beat Dustin Jacoby, because Dustin is, he's a good kickboxer, and I think the thing that was going against him the most was these short notice fights he kept taking. I was like, man, he's just a short notice fight after another one, and it wasn't giving him the opportunity to really hone his skill set and come out and throw effective offense consistently against elite level guys, because he had to worry about gas tanks. So he would find his moments. And against guys like Murad Buzidi, who are super experienced, you're going to struggle there. So I think Jacoby's going to win this tournament. I don't know if it gets him a title shot, but I'd be fine with Jacoby fighting in a title shot after winning this four-man tournament, meeting Artem Levin, or the rematch between Artem Levin and Simon Marcus. I think Jacoby wins the tournament all the way. The Xavier Vinny versus Daniel Sam fight's interesting to me. Sam is an experienced kickboxer, and he's had success against guys who are taller in the past. He himself, a big, stout, strong guy. I just feel like he is never, I mean, not consistent. He just has the ability to beat a guy who I consider elite here and there. But overall, I think, you know, I look at his run in Super Combat. I think he's a career fighter. I think he's a perfect fight at this stage for Xavier Vinny. I like Vinny to win the fight with his length and his distance. It's going to be a fun fight either way. I think that both guys will be technical as they throw heat, and I think it's going to be fun stuff, but I got Vinny winning slightly. I got to go with as we go to the main event, as Nicky Holtz can go against Raymond Daniels. Clearly, Raymond Daniels has got a shot. He's got spin kicks. He's got the KO power. He's got the athleticism. But does he have the ability to score consistent offense against Nicky Holtzkin? I don't think that's the case. I think Nicky Holtzkin is going to close the distance. And Daniels said earlier in the week that he's the matador, and Nicky Holtzkin's the bull. Bulls don't throw body shots. They just kind of spear straight through you. They don't have length. Their arms don't go wide. They don't have things that they will throw that for you to run into as you try to angle away from them. Nicky Holtzkin is going to walk Daniels down. He's going to, you know, get him into the corners, as usual. Daniel's going to try to run him into something jumping and spinning. Expect a lot of explosion and jumps from Daniels early. But Nicky Holtzkin, I mean, that body shot, it takes years off your life. And I think at some period of time, he's going to be able to get in the distance. He's going to be able to score in Daniels, and I do think that he will be able to stop Daniels again. Daniels is getting better everywhere, but it would have probably been a better fight for Daniels had it not been had he gotten more fights in between. You know, I think he had one fight in between, and that was on the San Diego card, and it was either San Diego or LA. I think it was San Diego. But that was when he was able to score a really quick stoppage over a guy who, he said during the fight, I knew that I could get my spinning techniques on him early in the fight. You need something where a guy's going to give you a little bit resistance. And even the fight with Jonathan Oliveira, at least Oliveira was trying, and that gave Daniels the opportunity to style him for a couple rounds before the fight was over with. I think Daniels is a good guy. I think he's improving all the time. It would have been better to see him improve with fights, but he's going to get Nicky Holtzkin here, and Nicky Holtzkin is just an awesome, awesome fighter. Best fighter in the world in his weight class, and I think that he wins. It should be a lot of fun, so thanks for following the show. I will be back next week. And next week I'm going to do a better job of getting – there's been some stadium fights that I really enjoyed, and I want to make sure I get my notes all put together. Somebody sent me a message saying that they didn't listen to they listened to my podcast and they like kickboxing, and then all of a sudden my breakdown of some of the stadium fights got them into stadium fights. And that honors me greatly. I remember somebody getting on me in the past about not doing more Muay Thai stuff, and it turns out the way that I've broken it down, people are now starting to message me and say, thank you for breaking this down. Thank you for introducing me to this guy. And I appreciate it because I really just want to get – I do this for free. This is just a hobby that I have. So hopefully you guys will get the opportunity to continue to watch and enjoy high-level kickboxing, high-level Muay Thai. Support these guys. Make sure you're watching Glory tomorrow night. And for those who are fans of me, watch my athletes compete in MMA and kickboxing and boxing. So thank you all. Love you. Appreciate it. God bless and have a good one. Peace.